Welcome to Under the Influence, the podcast where we help chiropractors improve their communication skills so they can help more people and help people more. I'm your host, Dr. Martin Harvey. I'm a chiropractor and I'm an expert in communicating the value of chiropractic. Today on Under the Influence, I am joined by Dr. Andrea Huddleston. Andrea is a chiropractor and she's an expert in chiropractic and women's health. So we have a fascinating discussion about the differences between men and women in terms of pelvic anatomy and spinal anatomy, and also look at the implications of changes in hormone levels that create changes in ligament function, a whole bunch of different things. And it's a really important discussion because for many practices, most practices, I would argue, you are seeing more women than men. And also in terms of providing care that is optimally impactful for them, it's important that we understand that context, that their body might respond to adjustments differently at different stages of their cycle or even different stages in their life, and that we can develop an understanding of that so that we can have more kind of nuance and mastery in terms of our care. So really fascinating discussion. Andrea is an absolute expert in this area. She's got 2 master's degrees in related areas as well as her chiropractic qualifications. So she really knows her stuff. And she's also an excellent communicator in making it relevant to those of us who maybe aren't practicing in women's health as a specialist area, but will be giving you tips and understandings that can help you level up your approach to women in your care. A couple of announcements. May 18th, I will be in London, UK, to present the Daily Visit Communication Intensive. So arguably, the daily adjustment visit is the most important visit because it's the one that we have with people most. It's the one where we can, if we set things up properly, create an interaction, a remarkable experience for people every time, where we're deepening the connection and deepening their understanding of the value of chiropractic for them. Or we can not put any thought into it and have the thing where gradually people are more likely to feel like they don't see the value of chiropractic. Anyway, it's a 1-day program. You will go home with your own approach to creating a remarkable visit every single visit, starting your next day in practice. So May 18th in London. The next weekend, the Friday, Saturday, May 24th and 25th, I will be in Lisbon in Portugal for the Portuguese Chiropractic Association 25th anniversary seminar. There's a great speaker lineup. It's got a focus on communication, caring, chiropractic. Amazing program, and I will hope to see you there. So let's welcome to Under the Influence, Dr. Andrea Huddleston.
Hey, Andrea. Great to see you.
Oh, Martin, thanks so much for having me. It feels like quite an honor. Obviously, I've known of your podcast, so I'm very happy to be sitting here on the other side of it.
I'm honored to have you here. I always feel like I've had a few people who've had podcasts for a lot longer than me on the show, and you join the ranks of Damo and others who have had podcasts going for years, and Brett Hill. So yes, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Martin. I don't think it means anything except I'm very used to talking into a microphone. I think that's all.
Yeah, no. And so your podcast is
Wellness Women Radio.
Excellent. Yeah. And how long have you been doing that for?
Oh gosh, it's definitely more than 7 years. Wow. I only say that's my point of reference because that's when I opened my practice, when I went from being an associate to having my practice was 7 years ago. And I think we were doing it for 2 years before that. So, okay, maybe about 9-ish years. And that's with Dr. Ashley Bont.
Fantastic. Yeah, wow. And so we'll loop back and talk about the podcast in a minute because we've got probably the most important question to deal with here, which is what sort of coffee are you under the influence of these days?
That is literally my favorite question ever because, Martin, I have my top 3 loves and my husband is fully aware of this order of this hierarchy as well. So it's totally okay for me to say that is my number 1 thing is our dogs or just dogs in general. My 2nd thing is coffee. It is number 2. And the way I have my coffee is I'm such a purist. It's a long black. I cannot add anything to it. No sugar, no milk. It will just completely ruin it. And that is probably one of the favorite parts of my day. And then number three on my, you know, things I love list is women's health, essentially. So learning and teaching women's health.
Wow. Excellent. Oh, yeah. well positioned, because we're going to at least deal with two of them. We probably won't loop back to dogs, but coffee. And so it's the espresso, your long black. Are you making it at home, or are you out purchasing, or what's the routine?
I normally make it at home, and you know, we've got a pretty decent coffee machine. I think we get our beans from Montville. They're these organic beans that I just particularly like from Queensland that we get over here. And
for listeners who aren't aware, you're in Perth, so
yes,
you're getting beans that are bypassing the spiritual homeland of coffee in Melbourne and going all the way from Queensland to Perth. That's serious commitment.
Yeah, look, I don't judge me for the footprint that I'm creating there by bringing them over here. But I look wholeheartedly think that Perth has the best coffee, and I know that we could argue about that.
Quit now.
Martin, how do you have your coffee?
So in the morning, I'll have a short black, but I have ice and a little bit of extra water. So it's sort of like a long black, but it's made with cold water and ice. And then from whenever I've stopped fasting, I normally have a piccolo latte. So, have the big home setup. So I have basically a semi-commercial machine and grinder and all that sort of stuff. So yes, it's a serious focus.
Oh, I love your commitment to that. That makes me happy, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And I buy my beans from a roaster that is walking distance from my home. So I feel like I'm scoring points for Melbourne coffee here. But
definitely. That overcompensates for me trucking mine over from Queensland.
Yeah, we balance out. We've got a bit of yin and yang. Yeah,
exactly.
So we can probably move on to the second thing that we're talking about, because I had the privilege of hearing you speak at the recent Concordia event, and I've known for years that you have had a special focus, special interest, special expertise in women's health. And I thought the presentation that you did at Concordia was just fantastic in terms of how you positioned women's health. It made me acutely aware of how perhaps poorly as a profession we've learned about women's health, where we've learned it very much as this sort of sub genre, this little niche area where, you know, 60% of the adults that I saw today would have been women. And I think that's true of many people's practice. So maybe did you want to share what your interest is, what the impact you're trying to have in that area is, and we can kind of go from there.
Yeah, great. And Martin, thank you so much for the kind words about my presentation at Concordia. You know, it is a particular level of torture to speak in front of your most respected peers.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people that you love the most, who you know are there to support you the most, but is also for some reason just nauseating. So, you know, I really appreciate that support. Thank you. I am so passionate about women's health, probably to the point of, you know, just complete obsession, which, you know, may or may not be healthy, who knows? And I think the influence that I'm trying to have is, or the message that maybe I'm trying to get across is probably twofold. So, for example, what I was trying to convey at Concordia to the chiros and even the non-chiropractors in the room is just having that deeper layer of understanding of even just the most simple things that we do and the flow-on effect that can have in terms of women's health and changing some of those very typical things that women experience day in and day out. Yeah. And the stat that you quoted there, Martin, that, you know, you see 60% women today, that is fairly standard across the board for most chiropractic practices, particularly in Australia. You know, it's definitely skewed a little bit towards women. Mine is certainly, much higher than that.
Yeah.
But the thing I was trying to sort of show them is that even if they don't necessarily want to have that particular focus in women's health and they don't want to get as laser focused on it as, say, what I am, that women will be coming into their practice with these chronic conditions that they do not get support with anywhere else. And this is pretty, you know, historical throughout, you know, most of, I guess, modern medicine, particularly in the Western world, that, and, you know, even when we look at the research around women's health or just, you know, anything in terms of medicine towards women, it's, we sort of get left behind a lot. And
well, I know that there's a lot of research studies where women are sort of actively excluded from trials because of the complexity that women's health has relative to men's because of that overlay of hormonal change in physiology, which just seems a bit preposterous where you just go, all right, it's a bit more complicated, so we just won't look at it.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And historically, that has been almost exclusively correct, that most, and even if we, I heard you mention your fasting, for example, Martin, you know, even most of the studies that have been done on, say, intermittent fasting have been done in men rather than women. So, you know, the benefits of that may not translate necessarily directly the way they do to women as what they would for men. So, you know, it's just so fascinating once you start to sort of dig a little bit deeper into this that you see that the way that women have been treated within healthcare in general is pretty appalling. You know, I think that medicine has definitely failed women. And I say that sort of day in and day out. And it's not to criticize a particular practitioner, but it's because I think the way that we look at a woman's body in general since, you know, antiquity is that there's been so many myths and misconceptions. And for example, the menstrual cycle for most of our history has been totally misunderstood and almost seen as something that could be, you know, dirty, unclean, inconvenient, you know, and all of those sorts of things. And it's just been in the last, gosh, maybe decade or so that I think that that is starting to change. And then that translates into all of the common things that we see women suffer with, whether it's, you know, horrific period pain that she's often told that, you know, this is normal or you're just unlucky or this is, you know, just the way it is for women, you know, you're made.
Just accept it.
You know, those normal physiological functions of your body are designed to cause you suffering and harm. You know, this is the pretext for it. And, you know, there's some really funny things that I've learned sort of along the way when I've really looked into some of the history around women's health. And Martin, I hope we're not digressing too much and I'll bring it back. So there used to be this medicalized acronym that gynecologists used to have where they would perform a hysterectomy for a woman. And most of the time a hysterectomy was performed without the medical requirement. So without it being, you know, a life-saving sort of procedure or there was sort of a medical reason for it. And that medical acronym that was given to a healthy uterus that was removed was called CPU or chronic persistent uterus, which means it's still there. It's just, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's just still there. So, and then they also, there was this saying that there's no room in the tomb for the womb. So isn't that just, you know, I see your eyes just, you know, go so large there at that. Cause isn't that just completely crazy?
Well, that's sort of part of that. There's that idea that they talk about as of selling sickness, where if you define part of, you know, their normal physiological experience of people as a disease or a disorder, that it then psychologically makes it easier for people to accept that they have to have a fairly radical intervention. And calling something chronic and persistent seems to me that you're kind of pathologizing just something as simple as the presence of a vital organ. Just that seems a new level of selling sickness, medicalizing the normal human experience.
I know. I just, when I was sort of reading some of that history, it was just so outstanding. And I really hope that it's different, you know, these days, but I know that, you know, for example, every minute of every day a woman has a hysterectomy, and only 1 in 10 of those are actually for medical purposes. Yeah. So,
so what would be the pathway for the 9 out of 10 that have a hysterectomy and it's not kind of medically needed?
I think that a lot of the time it's for things like heavy bleeding or the presence of fibroids, where women are not really given the perspective of what that means and why that's happening. And most of the time, you know, during that sort of perimenopausal transition, so from like perimenopause to menopause, a very common symptom that happens with the reduction in progesterone is a heavier period. And women, you know, there's obviously other medical treatments that they can have for that. And namely, they might be offered an ablation or something, but you don't know what you don't know. So if they're told that the only thing that they can do is, oh, well, you should just have a hysterectomy for this because you're already done having children, and it will prevent you getting uterine cancer because you won't have a uterus anymore. You know, it's just, that seems very, very tempting. And particularly if all of your friends are doing it as well, and it's just the done thing, then, you know, or it could be the presence of fibroids, which are completely self-limiting, especially when, you know, a woman is approaching menopause, then the hormonal shift that, you know, drives that fibroid in the first place is going to recede. So those are sort of two examples of that. It can be if there's chronic pelvic pain and they can't get to the source of it, then a hysterectomy is often offered, which, you know, often doesn't unfortunately fix that.
I've had a number of women who have come in who've been given a hysterectomy for chronic pelvic pain and then ended up seeing me because they've that didn't do anything. I had one woman where it made her pelvic pain much worse. Interesting. You mentioned in your presentation that I think you had a focus on endometriosis and dysmenorrhea as sort of conditions that might have an influence on the presentation that we have with people coming into our practice, and that they were things that chiropractors could often have a positive impact on in a range of ways. There was you gave some statistics in terms of prevalence there as well. This is a question without notice, and I'm asking you to remember your statistics from a presentation you did maybe a month ago. But ballpark-wise,
That's easy, Martin. So in particular, the conditions that I was referring to at Concordia, and great memory, by the way. I'm so impressed.
Don't be too impressed. I was taking notes. So,
that's even more impressive you took the initiative to do that. So statistically at the moment, about 1 in 10 women have endometriosis. However, even that statistic is a little bit problematic because it takes about 7 years for accurate diagnosis of that. Yeah. So I do think the stats on that are actually much higher. It hasn't caught up yet.
Yeah.
Up to 25% of women have polycystic ovarian syndrome. Mm-hmm. 95% of reproductive aged women will experience dysmenorrhea or period pain. Mm-hmm. And then I was also talking about the presence of thyroid conditions that might present as well. Right. And that's about 20% of reproductive aged women as well. If you look at all, if we take out the dysmenorrhea, because that's almost everybody, if we look at the rest of them combined, that's over 50% of the female patients that you're going to be having that have some sort of diagnosable endocrinological issue that could also overlap in its presentation for what they might commonly come into your practice with as well.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're a chiropractor who has, you know, not a special interest in women's health, but a special interest in helping lots of people, including women, how should we be thinking about this? How should we be approaching this? How should we be modifying things so that we can deliver better care to women generally, but women with these conditions in particular?
And one of the things that I really love doing is just without having chiropractors, you know, go back to uni and do like another 5 years study on this sort of thing, or learn very specialized techniques that might take them years and years and years to master. I think just having a little bit of a foundation of the difference between male and female physiology and knowing what to recognize the differences between that. And I'll explain that a little bit further.
Right.
And also just understanding the influence that you can have or that you're already having if you don't change anything, but you just have this additional layer of understanding, which can then actually drive the way you're communicating with your patients and that, you know, conversation that you're having with them. Because I am certain that, you know, almost all chiropractors or almost all chiropractors will have those cases where they're adjusting a woman and she'll come back and say that her period pain is improving or, you know, maybe her hormonal symptoms are decreasing. Maybe she has less PMS, maybe, you know, whatever it might be. And there's a very easy way to connect those dots. And that's what I love showing them. It's like, this is why.
Yeah.
And if I sort of circle back to, you know, even thinking about some of the subtle differences between the male and female body that I think is really relevant for us. And that could just be understanding the different biomechanics or even just the structural anatomy of say the pelvis.
Yeah.
So not even diving into reproductive physiology or anatomy or anything like that, but just understanding that a woman's pelvis is a different shape. It's a different size. The angles are a bit different. So, say the angle of the pubic bone is much, much wider. The lumbosacral angle is also a bit sharper as well. Even the way her extremities, or her lower extremities come off the pelvis is at a different angle to men. But also the ligamentous changes or the stability of the pelvis will ebb and flow throughout the menstrual cycle and will also change depending on where a woman is at in her, I guess, stage of life as well.
Yes.
And we really start to see that diverge in the sort of puberty transition. So for girls, it's usually around sort of 12-ish. For boys, it happens a bit later, about 14. Mm-hmm. And that's where you'll see, you know, the male pelvis become very strong and solid and the ligamentous structures develop their tensile strength and they'll have very much more of an sort of a straight up and down kind of angulation. Whereas the female pelvis will then start to be much more pliable and that will change, like I said, throughout the cycle. So during menstruation, we do get more ligamentous laxity. We're much more prone to, you know, strain injuries as well. And that's a really common thing that I think would be great for us to know, because if you're adjusting a woman and she's maybe responding differently to your care than what you would expect.
Yeah.
Or she's presenting differently to how she was previously, then a really easy question could be, where are you at in your cycle at the moment?
Yeah.
And that's a very non-threatening, very gentle way to ask a woman that as well, that, you know, most women's health specialists, or 4 out of 5, in fact, are actually men. So women are very used to having these conversations with men. So I really encourage the male practitioners not to shy away from that. But that's just a bit of an example of how just having that layer of understanding of how the, you know, male and female body is different, that's so relevant to us. And then as we sort of go through our hormonal transitions throughout our life, particularly in perimenopause and menopause, there's a very significant change that happens then that's also very chiropractically relevant, which is hormonally driven. And with that shift in estrogen, we can see dramatic increases in scoliotic curves that were once stable, for example. So I think that, you know, just that as an example is a really important thing for us to consider.
Absolutely. Can I just double click on the communication part of what you were talking about there? You gave, I think, a really, you know, best practices approach of saying, where are you at in your cycle at the moment? Can you give me what the bad version of that would be, the thing to avoid asking?
I think that if someone was being really awkward about it, so dancing around the subject and not wanting to use, you know, certain terminology, for example, and, you know, medically speaking, calling a woman's period like menses is correct, but I think that that's an awkward way to refer to it. I think if a male practitioner is not comfortable having these conversations at all, then but they do feel like there's an influence on their care, then maybe that's something that they need to sort of upskill on, I would think, and become comfortable with these conversations and maybe practice them with colleagues, for example. Yeah. Maybe saying those sorts of things to a young teenage girl may be inappropriate, or maybe a woman who is older and you're not sure if she has entered that transition of menopause. So an easier question in that age group could be, do you mind if I ask when your last menstrual period was? And that could be a way she could say, oh, look, I have my period at the moment. It's like, got it. This makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, got it. I was also just curious. I know that there's, if we look at some of that history of women's bodies being portrayed as sort of faulty and impure and all those sort of things, that sometimes associated with that, there seems to have been this kind of layer of misogyny where men will kind of almost in a dismissive way, if a woman's upset or something, say, have you got your period, or some sort of joking thing. And I wasn't sure whether part of that might also be something like, I've tended to use a terminology similar to you, where if I think that, look, something odd is going on or something different is going on here, I will say, look, where are you at as far as your cycle goes? Because I sort of feel like then it's pretty clear that it's to do with something else, and it's not me saying you're being difficult and therefore have you got your period? So I don't know. Is that a thing, or am I imagining things?
No, you're definitely not imagining things. And Martin, that can be very triggering for women as well. Yeah. Just blaming everything on their period.
Yes. Well,
and you know, it could be perfectly true. You know, there is a condition called PMDD, or premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is like PMS on absolute steroids, where women can become both homicidal and suicidal for, you know, sometimes 2 weeks of the whole month, and it can have such a significant impact on their relationships, and you know, their work and their life in general. But at that time, that's not really the time to tell them or ask them that. So, you know, particularly if a woman is in that kind of premenstrual phase or the first couple of days of menstruation, we also become much more right-brained. I'll have to check that, but I'm pretty sure it's much more right-brained. So don't you dare criticize us. This is not the time to tell us off for not having done our homework or, you know, exercises or whatever it might be. But it can be quite triggering, and almost with a layer of condescension, if you're saying to a woman that, oh, it must be that time of the month if you're feeling a bit, you know.
Okay, no, got it. All right, that was super helpful, thank you.
My pleasure.
So one of the other things that I felt was quite, I hadn't heard previously, like I've read a lot of papers in terms of the potential link between chiropractic care and dysmenorrhea and so on, but I hadn't heard the information that you were given at Concordia in regard to the angulation of the uterus and pooling and those sort of things. Would you be okay to share some of that?
Yeah, I would love to. And Martin, this is something that I am just so incredibly obsessed with and will tell anybody who asks me about it.
Excellent.
And there's a very, I think there's some very reasonable, both anatomical, physiological, and scientific sort of evidence that supports this sort of way that we're looking at period pain at the moment. And it even dates back to the first paper that I found on this was from the British Medical Journal in 1881. So this isn't new, but the anatomical position of the uterus within the pelvic bowl, in normal anatomical position is ever so slightly antiverted, so slightly forwards tilting. About 70 to 75% of women have an antiverted uterus.
Yep.
And I don't think that it's a coincidence that also most women have that forward pelvic tilt as well. And I think that the association there is because the uterus is suspended on ligaments that anchor into the pelvis.
Yep.
So the strongest ones attach into the anterior sacrum that then project to the cervix, so that maintains that position. That we've got other ones like the cardinal ligaments that attach to the ischial tuberosities and then up to the cervix as well. There's the pubocervical ligaments from the pubic bone to the cervix, and then the round ligament maintains that antiversion relatively.
Yeah.
So though those are the main kind of ligamentous structures that control that position of the uterus. Yep. So if there's any changes in pelvic alignment, it's very easy to see that we can have changes in that uterine position, either in antiversion or retroversion. So mm-hmm. when a uterus is retroverted, it's backwards tilting. Somewhere around 20% of women have that, and it seems to be much more of a pathological sort of process.
Yep.
So it's much more strongly associated with trauma or conditions like endometriosis, for example.
Okay. So can I just clarify there, when you're yes. saying the retroverted uterus being associated with trauma, meaning there's been a trauma to them that has triggered their uterus to be retroverted?
Okay. So usually like a pelvic trauma, for example, so it could be a really big fall or accident. For some reason, there's also research that, you know, it shows that women with a retroverted uterus, there's other traumas that can be involved with that as well, including sexual trauma and that sort of thing. But it's usually from a traumatic perspective, some sort of like, you know, accidental fall or something like that. So, you know, the uterine positions are quite varied. So, and the degree of variation in either the antiverted or the retroverted position, so the degree of flexion, is an independent risk factor for period pain.
Wow. So the further forward or backward you go, the more likely you are to get period pain.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And the way I described it at Concordia, Martin, and I'll show you with my hands now, and I know that this is an audio recording, so I don't know if you want to use this video, but I'll try to explain it as best I can. So as the uterus tilts forwards, for example, so if we're talking about an antiverted uterus, the blood will pool in that front surface of the uterus, and in that antiverted position, it forms almost like a valve between the body of the uterus and the cervix.
So if we're sort of thinking of the, this is probably a terrible way of describing it, but if we're talking about the uterus as being almost like an avocado, an inverted avocado sort of shape, where you've got the bulbous bit at the top and then the bit at the, and then you've got the cervix at the bottom.
Yes.
As you're tipping forward or backward, that valvy bit near the cervix is going to be more, you know, less hydraulically effective, for want of a better term.
Yeah, it just, gravity can't do its job as well.
Yeah.
So it's more difficult for that blood to flow. And so what that means is that the uterus has to create stronger myometrial contractions to then move that blood. And those myometrial contractions are period cramps.
Got it.
Now, there can also be rotational aspects to the uterus. There's different variations in which you can have an antiverted and then anti-flexed uterus, so it tilts forward and then forwards on itself again. Same too, there can be a retroversion or retroversion with retroflexion too. So, you know, there's lots of different positional variations, and also with a rotational aspect to that uterus. I have found anecdotally in my patients and in the teaching that I've done that there's usually a rotational aspect to the sacrum, where we've got torsion on that uterosacral ligament as well, an example. And the evidence around the position of the uterus and the degree of flexion being an independent risk factor for period pain is published research. This is not just me saying it. It's from a really good journal that did that. So I think that this would be such a great PhD topic to look at chiropractic and period pain that I might tackle one day when I've got time.
Yeah, I was about to say, when is this starting?
I think that would just be such a cool thing to look at. So
absolutely.
Hopefully that sort of description on audio only made sense to everybody listening.
Yeah. Well, it did to me. I had the video as well. So in terms of then like going back, how did you first of all get into chiropractic? And then once in chiropractic, how did this interest in women's health specifically kind of blossom for you?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have been adjusted since birth. And so my mom always took us to our family chiropractor. And along the way, our family chiropractor became our first point of call. You know,
Got it.
If we were sick, we would get adjusted. If, you know, whatever it might be, that, you know, they were our go-to. We always thought get adjusted first. And, you know, when you're a teenager, you don't realize that the things that you do are different or abnormal. And when, you know, my friends would be asking me, oh, do you have a bad back or something? I was like, what does that have to do with anything? Like, I didn't even connect the dots that that's, you know, what chiropractors were sort of known for. And so as soon as I started figuring out that maybe what I did was a bit different, that's when I became quite obsessed with it. And I was fortunate enough to have some really incredible chiropractic influences early on who really anchored that sort of passion and obsession for me as well. And then I think that it was probably inevitable that I got into women's health because I am one of five girls. So I have four sisters. And I think growing up, I was mostly surrounded by women. Like we didn't even have like male pets. It was pretty
women
much
only.
All women, you know. I had aunties, not uncles. Even all my cousins are female as well. So I don't know what happened there, but I was just surrounded by women.
Yeah, powerful force there. So was this in Perth? Did you grow up in Perth or?
No, I've lived in Perth, I think, for maybe 12 years, maybe.
Okay. Yep.
I definitely lose track of time. Somewhere between 12 to 15 years. No, I grew up in Queensland. And I was just surrounded by all women. But at the same time, most of these women had some sort of hormonal issues. So my older sister, Sarah, I remember one day waking up to her literally screaming the house down. And I ran into her room expecting to I'd be fighting off an assailant or something who was trying to hurt her because this was in the middle of the night. And I'll never forget it because she was lying on the floor of her bedroom, clawing at her abdomen, writhing in pain. Like, you know, the exorcist had nothing on her, like in this moment. And when she was consolable, she was saying that the clawing at her abdomen, she felt like she wanted to pull her ovaries out through her stomach because she'd had a burst ovarian cyst and she was in agony. And this was fairly early on in her, you know, like menstrual or puberty journey. And so she was 2 years older than me. I think she was maybe 13 or 14 at the time. And it was horrific for her, but also, you know, me.
A bit scarring for you.
Yeah, totally. So this is what I expected. And this is, you know, we were sort of just waiting. Like, and I think lots of women are like that as well. They sort of just, if they do get horrific symptoms, they're like, okay, so now this is my turn. This is what I have to expect. And it just couldn't be further from the truth. All of those things are absolutely abnormal. And that's one of the main things that I love teaching and love seeing that light bulb turn on for, you know, for women and for my patients, that when you show them how good their period can be and what a normal period actually is, I feel like it changes everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So just going back a little bit, who was the family chiropractor who got you sort of directed towards chiropractic?
Now, I can't remember exactly who was our original chiropractor that mum took me to as a baby, but the very influential chiropractor for me in Toowoomba was Dr. Tracy Kennedy Shanks.
Awesome. Yeah.
She really influenced how I practice today.
Yeah.
And since then, I think especially going through uni, like Damien Christoph was probably also like one of the biggest influences on me too. And, you know, now he's one of my best friends and I feel so lucky to have met him as well.
Fantastic. So just for people who aren't sort of in Australia, Tracy Kennedy Shanks is a long-term chiropractor in Queensland, amazing practice, really lovely person. And Damien's previous guest on the podcast is a chiropractor, originally started working as a naturopath and great chiropractor practices here in the copy capital of the world, Melbourne.
We'll see. We'll see.
Okay. So here we are. You've graduated. You have a special interest. How did you develop this level of understanding? Is that stuff that you've just read on your own? Have you gone on to do other study? How have you developed this level of interest?
So it's been quite a obsessive, unrelenting, and still is journey, really. When I first started in practice, I started, and I think, again, just because of probably the fact that I've always just been surrounded by women, I started attracting women with just all sorts of horrific symptoms. And I think I've always been a quite a holistic sort of chiropractor, or, you know, and a vitalistic chiropractor I would sort of associate with. So naturally we would look at those things. And I had a patient who very early on, who just changed, I think, the trajectory of my career. And she had probably the worst case of endometriosis at the time that I'd ever even read about in a textbook. So she was, I think, in her early 30s at the time, from memory, and she would hemorrhage for 10 days a month. And she would faint and vomit. She'd lose bowel and bladder control when she would have a period. And she would need to be hospitalized almost every month with her period pain and the amount of blood loss that she would have. And I could not understand or fathom how someone could endure such suffering for such a long time. And right. She had tried literally everything that you can imagine, you know, everything that medicine and everything else had to offer. She'd had 11 laparoscopic surgeries. She was offered a full hysterectomy when she was 21. She'd been in clinical drug trials. She was put on chemotherapy drugs. She was put on menopause drugs to block all of her, she was put on drugs to induce menopause as a cycling woman to, you know, block all her hormone production and everything else you can imagine. And she had such debilitating pain every single day. So it wasn't just with her period. It was a crescendo of pain that would sort of exacerbate throughout the month. And I just couldn't believe how someone could suffer so much and there was nothing that anyone sort of could do for her. So I also thought I had absolutely nothing to lose because she'd literally tried everything before. Yeah. And, you know, fortunately through the course of her care, she had some pretty life-changing changes and was able to then go and, you know, essentially get on with her life. And she moved to Cambodia to work with the Save the Children Foundation for 6 months, which was something that was always so purposeful for her, but she could never be away from Western medicine because of her symptoms. So, you know, that is this idea that women's, their health has a greater purpose.
Absolutely.
And so from that, it really lit a fire in me that if I wanted to play in this space, I really needed to have some credibility and needed to know my stuff. So I went back to uni. I did two master's degrees, so one in women's health medicine and one in reproductive medicine. I fought my way into those courses because before that, they weren't offered to sort of anyone outside of that sort of medical realm. And so I did, I think that was, I graduated from those 7 or 8 years ago, I think now. And ever since then, I, you know, am still studying and learning every single day. And my patients are always such great teachers as well. Just, you know.
So tell me, what's practice like for you? Like, I can imagine, you know, it's going to, if that's an area of particular focus and you're seeing people with a range of sort of health issues, et cetera, so what's the average day in practice like for you?
Well, Martin, how specific do you want to get? So, look, my days are pretty long. Like, I know that sort of average chiropractic shifts are maybe 4 hours. So my shifts are usually about 6 hours, which I'm usually pretty cooked towards the end of those. And it will be a mixture of regular adjustment visits. And most of those are women, and most of those are women's health things that we are sort of working on as well during the regular adjustment times. And, and there'll be some long appointments as well, which are a little bit more complicated things where we're also looking at everything else associated with, you know, whether it's, you know, diet, lifestyle, you know, and every other sort of practice that goes with that. And those women might have a whole host of different symptoms, or they could be struggling to conceive, or they could be actively undergoing, you know, IVF, and I'm supporting them through that as well. So that's what it looks like.
Got it. Yeah. That's sort of what I was curious about, because I was thinking, sort of sounds almost like a chiropractic neurology practice or something like that, where there's this core of chiropractic as at the core of it, and then there's this extra skill set and understanding that can guide people in with a particular area of challenge. And I just wasn't sure how that would piece together in terms of the way that the practice would run.
Yeah. So I still, you know, and I still have, you know, very stock standard adjusting times and blocks, where, you know, patients will be block booked and we'll, you know, I'll have that beautiful flow, and that's, you know, always just feels the best. But I think because I'm so obsessive about some things, I really love to dive deep into the nitty gritty with some people as well. And those might also be patients from other chiropractors where they're getting adjusted with those chiropractors and I'm just working on the other stuff.
Wow, amazing. And so in terms of how does your podcast fit into that? Is your podcast intended for women? Is it intended for people who are just curious about women's health, or is it intended for healthcare practitioners? Where would you sort of position that?
Oh, good question. I think so the podcast I do with Dr. Ashley Bond, so the two of us combined, we are the Wellness Women. So originally we started that with the intention of having almost like a filing system of information for our patients. So we'd say, just listen to episode 14 on, you know, whatever it might be, rather than having the same conversations over and over or running, you know, 100 different workshops, for example. And I think we launched it like just at a really good time when podcasting was really becoming quite popular, and it sort of just took off and became so much more popular than we ever could have dreamed it to be. And so it sort of has just given us a platform to really try and educate women worldwide, but also practitioners as well. You know, we get feedback all the time from chiropractors who also share it with their patients too, but also really love it for themselves. We try to balance it with a level of really detailed nerdiness and, you know, like the sort of the interesting stuff as well. And it's for, you know, it's for all women, I guess. And we cover sort of everything that you can imagine in women's health, but there's some episodes targeted at men specifically as well, Martin. Ooh. So feel free to jump into those.
Absolutely.
If you wish.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds intriguing. And so then in terms of where to from here, you mentioned the possibility of a PhD, and do you have a path forward, or is this just something that's evolving as you're following it through? Where are you at?
I definitely don't think I'm done with study yet. I think that there will be something else. So I think the PhD seems the next most logical step, but I am so passionate about teaching and, you know, teaching chiropractors. So there's, you know, seminar series that I run, some with Ashley as well, which
so
is great fun.
Tell us about that. What's the series?
So the first one is called Women's Health Essentials. So that is essentially understanding all the intricacies of the differences between men and women, how, you know, the hormonal cycles and the menstrual cycle influences all of that. So you can sort of tweak, tailor, or I guess customize your care depending on where that woman is, or not as well, and just have that level of understanding. I also teach some really cool period pain tools for chiropractors. So for example, the uterus lift technique, which originally is from AK and SOT, that and absolute full credit to them, and I always, you know, give credit where credit's due. I've modified it a little bit, and I help practitioners to identify exactly how to do that depending on the woman. And then I have developed a technique to correct a retroverted uterus. And the brilliant Dr. Craig Sperling, who used to have a practice in Alice Springs, helped me to figure out the essentially the ins and outs of that. So we sat down and workshopped for like about a week to, you know, get that right. And, you know, so that's just a way that we've figured that out, and that's really cool. So I teach that as well, and also go through all of the different sort of hormonal transitions and what to look for, and then how to help with some of those common conditions. So that's Women's Health Essentials. And then The next part is what I do with Ashley, and that is fertility and pregnancy. And that's a 2-day seminar. So day one is essentials and day two is advanced. So, you know, no one has to do the advanced stuff if they don't want to. The essentials is a complete system all into itself. Yeah. And we also teach an 8-step birth, what we call the birth ready method, which is an 8-step adjustment protocol that you can do for pregnant women as well, which could be a complete system for pregnant women too. But that is really fun. That's what we've been teaching a lot of lately, is the pregnancy and fertility series, because I really am so passionate about fertility at the moment. And I don't think that anything is more important or will change the trajectory of patients' lives.
Oh, absolutely.
Than being able to, you know, conceive and have a healthy family if that's what they want.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if there are people who are interested in learning more about that, where's the best place for them to find out about the seminars?
Oh, they can go to my website is probably the easiest, which is Dr. Andrea, so DRANDREA .com.au. Then on the events page there, or the specific seminars is under stellawomenshealth.com.au, right. I think.
We'll have the link to it all like in the show notes. So don't worry too much. We'll make sure the right link is there for people to follow that up.
Thank you.
So it sounds like in terms of the influence, then you're looking to have that influence both within your practice in terms of understanding more and developing more tools to be able to help women, and also in terms of spreading awareness, understanding and capacity for chiropractors and other people to positively impact women's health. Is that kind of where you're headed then?
Yeah, definitely, Martin. I think that when you asked me that question about what influence am I trying to have, I do think it's twofold. So yes, in the general public, with my patients and, you know, the general, just women's health community, I guess, just them understanding that their health has a greater purpose, and that their symptoms are not normal and they're not designed for that suffering and harm that we sort of mentioned early on. But then the other side of that is, really, I feel like I've done my job if I have empowered chiropractors with some knowledge, but also just lit a fire under them to know that the work that they're already doing is absolutely having an influence on these things. And if they want to take it a step further, then I can teach that as well, really. Yeah.
That's awesome. So we've spoken about some chiropractic influences. Any other chiropractic influences or any other life influences that you feel have been significant in the journey to where you are now?
Gosh, that's such a good question. And there's going to be so many. And if I start down the road of chiropractic influences, I'm going to forget people. And then, but I think the people who inspire me at the moment, I think, are the women who are breaking the mold. And they just so happen to be, you know, in the area of women's health. And, you know, some of those are, you know, some early influence as well. So, you know, these are people like Dr. Christian Northrup, Dr. Sarah Gottfried, Kelly Brogan. So women who are, you know, really, maybe
sort of questioning the status quo. And
exactly. You know, there was a reporter, a journalist, by the name of Sue Lloyd Roberts. She died a few years ago, but she wrote this book called The War on Women. Mm-hmm. And that was a incredible look at both women's health and just the way women are treated around the world. Yeah. And, you know, those are the people that inspire me, who are, I guess, bringing a spotlight to women's health, to really change the way that we have historically looked at and treated women.
Yeah, it sounds like some incredibly inspiring people. So thank you, Andrea, for sharing your passion and your wisdom around this area. And I think it's really important guidance for us all in terms of how we can do a better job in helping women in our practice and women generally. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Martin. Thanks for giving me a platform just to, like, you know, riff with you about, again, all the things that I'm passionate about.
Yeah, oh, no, at my absolute pleasure. Thanks.
If you like today's episode, then you will love the Retention Recipe 2.0. It's an online workshop that is broken into 33 lessons and has over 7 hours of content, which will teach you to confidently communicate the value of proactive chiropractic in the first 12 visits. So if we want to have long-term retention, if we want people to stay with us for months, years, and reap the really amazing health benefits that happen with long-term chiropractic care, we need to set the foundation for that in the first 12 visits. So the approaches in the Retention Recipe 2.0 are based on state-of-the-art influence strategies that are effective, ethical, and they're enjoyable to use. They will help you to have more fun, less stress, and increase your retention, which means more practice growth and less always being on the hunt for new people. Check it out in the link in the show notes.